Julia Simpson having a chat with Sabrina George at a very noisy hotel in Covent Garden in London.
Very nice. I always hang out here.
So, starting off, what moment do you remember which made you decide to do comedy? Do you remember that situation?
My path to that moment is kind of it's not as straightforward as a lot of guys. I speak to people like for instance, Ed Byrne, a very funny Irishman, who first got the bug for comedy when he was at Glasgow University, because like lots of universities, they have comedy nights, either weekly or monthly or whatever, and they'll see, you know, guys will see comedians come through, do a set and kind of think, oh, I can do that, or they'll be involved with the student union and booking that, and they'll get the kind of bug from that. I didn't go that route at all. I've always watched a lot of comedy on television, you know what I mean? Things like, you know, people like Ben Elton and Eddie Izzard and Lenny Henry, and especially a lot of American comics as well. People like Steve Martin and especially Richard Pryor. But I never thought it'd be something I would ever do myself. I just thought it was a complete world apart. And I was at I went to a wedding with a girlfriend of mine. And during the speeches, I got up to go to the toilet, and the master of ceremonies saw me stand and thought that I wanted to say something. And I couldn't really turn around and say, well, no, I'm sorry, I'm off to take a leak, I'm off for a pee. So I went up there, and I just started talking. I intended to wish them all the best for the future, but I'd mentioned something which had happened at the church during the ceremony, and that got a laugh. And I started to talk about my parents' relationship, and that got another laugh. And I the light on the thing is flashing, so that's why I stopped sliding, because I'm used to it. Normally when I see a flashing red light, you know,
get off stage.
Exactly. It's time to stop talking. Thank you much. You've been great. Good night. I said to my wife the other night, thanks for coming, you were great. I spoke about during this wedding. I spoke about my parents, about people from my mum's church and stuff, and was getting laughs all the way. And a woman that was there asked me if I did stand up. I said no. She said you should, and I said you must be crazy. And she said no. And she gave me the number of Noel Faulkner, who runs a comedy cafe in Shoreditch, Central London. I said I should really go down there and try out.
And do you think your background connected with the church allowed you to have a bit of, I won't say freedom, but gave you a little bit of experience of standing up in front of people talking?
I kind of think so, because the church that I grew up in was one of those Pentecostal, kind of Southern Baptist kind of things. You know, it's all very, very lively and energetic. And, you know, normally you go into a church and there's, in England, and there's some old guy, he's about 97 years old, playing a piped organ, and the members of the congregation are kind of placing bets to see if he's actually going to survive to the end of the song. You know what I mean? Whereas the church that I went to, you'd have like a drummer, a bass player, keyboardist, guitar, or a rhythm section. You'd have like it was like a band, and the preacher would be very, 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 very charismatic, you know. And the shortest verse in the Bible is Jesus wept, right? Yet I've known preachers that could actually take that and go on for ages. You know what I mean? Just say the gospel. Next verse said, Jesus, Son of God, rose the sheriff, a bright morning star. Jesus, who came into my life when I was just down and out. And he wept, he cried, tears came from his eyes. You know what I mean? It's like hearing some of the preachers before us. You know what I mean? But that kind of self-expression, I guess, played a big part in the fact that although I didn't know it, but I wasn't that afraid of actually standing in front of a crowd and actually saying anything, because I've seen so many people, I've grown up seeing so many people do it without any professional experience, without any studying or whatever. They would just instinctively get up and be able to say what's on their mind and get their point across and keep the audience or keep the congregation captivated. Up from, you know, being 2 minutes or 2 hours. You know what I mean? They keep holding on for that length. So I guess that like had a little bit of a influence on my stand up. But then again, I didn't put the two together.
No.
Like I said, I thought stand up is a world completely away from me. So anyway, this woman who wanted me to go down to the Comedy Cafe hounded me for about 2 years. And she would rather ring me. She ring me like weekly. Then it went to sort of like every three weeks, monthly. And then, but you know, every 6 weeks. But she'd always want my case about going down there. And I thought to myself, after about 2.5 years, let me just go down and prove to her once and for all that standing up in front of a room full of strangers telling jokes is not for me.
It's not what Junior does.
It doesn't want Junior. Junior is a guy that will, you know, if you've got a family get together, you know, he'll be, you know, he'll come out with things every now and again, which is quite funny. But as for.
Did you ever do that thing that Eddie Murphy did in one of his movies where he does that wonderful scene of his kids
and
the family's like going, oh, for goodness sake, shut up, and he goes on and on and on.
I know, never did that. I always knew when to cut it, you know, thank God, you know what I mean, because also, you have to remember that my parents are being from Jamaica and old school. If you embarrass them, you know, they will embarrass you, you know what I mean. My parents were generation that whipping their kids' hides, right, in the middle of the town centre.
It was a good thing.
Oh yeah, it's grand. Got a good workout. Yes, I beat Johnny Anderson. Your workout, it's cardiovascular. Oh yeah, get the heart pumping good. So
exercise the lungs.
Exactly. So I never went that far. But the, so I went down, so it was a Wednesday night, and there was that number five on a night of 12 people doing stand-up. And Jeff Boyce was hosting that night. And when I finished my set, because I must have done about 15 minutes condensed into five, because I did that whole thing of being so nervous. Even though, you know, I'd seen people do public speaking before in my life, and I'd done a bit of myself within the church thing. Never in front of people I don't know. Because the one thing about doing stuff in a church is the worst heckle you'll ever get is bless him Lord. You know what I mean? That's about as far as it goes.
It's quite sweet, really.
It's quite nice. It's quite encouraging. You know what I mean? You don't get someone, get off, you rubbish.
So, and there's no way in the church that you can judge whether you're doing well or not by love.
It's quite the opposite. You know, because they're listening and whatever. And everything that you say within the church is kind of geared towards, you know, a heavenly, you know, hopefully an eternal life and all that kind of stuff. You know, so basically, and it's also preachers, obviously, preachers of the converted, because what you're saying is stuff that the people listen to agree with anyway. Because if not, they wouldn't be there in the first place. So therefore, it's quite an easy crowd to play to. When you're going to a room, which is everybody is of, they don't know each other.
Yes, thank you very much. That was the waiter.
That was the waiter.
Comedy waiter.
So I went up there and I was standing there on stage in the Comedy Cab and doing my stuff.
Did you bring mates with you to support
no,
you?
No,
completely
no.
On your own?
Completely on my own. The only person that was with me was this woman that was hounding me all the time that I should do it. And the only reason I invited her along was to prove to her, you know, please
leave
get off my
me
case.
Alone.
Yeah, leave me alone now. No food to you. So I'd done my set, and I remember talking about my parents, and the only other routine I remember doing at the time was just a routine about Skippy the Bush Kangaroo. Explaining why there's no kangaroos in the West Indies, because even though it's hot, because you know West Indians are too laid back to be jumping around, you know what I mean, trying to save boys that fall down holes and mine shafts. You know? So I finished and I came on stage, and Jeff Boyce, the compere, said that he'd worked with people like Joe Brand and Eddie Izzard and Lee Evans and quite a few others. And you could say that, you could say without a shred of a doubt that this guy that you're seeing, you're someone you're definitely going to see doing stand-up in the future. He's got a career, he's just got a knack for it. You know, whoever does he think, I don't know who else is going to be on tonight, but this guy has definitely got a career in stand-up. And that was a really nice thing to hear, especially that the first time I'd ever set foot inside a comedy club, never ever be inside seeing stand-up live myself. To hear that was kind of encouraging. And the audience voted me the winner, and my prize was I know, go back the following Thursday and to do, you know, 5 minutes in front of, 10 minutes in front of the, you know, paying crowd. And I got the price sum of £25 for my effort. So that was it. But I didn't even, I thought that was a fluke at that point. I still didn't think that this is something that I could do. That was around about October 92, I did that. I did about 3 or 4 open mics after that. But, and then sort of, 93, didn't do anything at all. Did other stuff, did a couple of, got the bug about being in front of the crowd when I did a few plays. But never ever didn't do stand up. And it was my barber. Seriously.
It was my barber. The thing
about the brothers, about black guys, is that this you know, you never disrespect your mother, right? And you never, you know, cheat on your barber. You know what I mean? You'll cheat on your boss, you'll cheat on your woman, you'll cheat on your taxes, but you'll never cheat on your barber, right? Because your barber can tell immediately if you've been seeing someone else.
He'll mash your hair up.
Exactly. He'll shake your hair up, right? But literally make sure you're housebound for the next 2 weeks, right? Because you can just sit down and the barber just sort of goes, look, this is not my cut, you know what I mean? You've been seeing other, you know what I mean? Other scissors have been in here. So he was decided to throw a New Year's Eve party for all his clients, and asked me, because he knew I did, you know, plays and all that stuff, asked me to introduce the singer. He booked a singer for the night. And I said, no, come down, you'll be fine or whatever. I can't do it myself because I'll be doing a DJ or whatever. I said, this is okay. So I went down there and there was a woman there who was wearing, when I went on, the first thing I noticed was this tall Amazonian looking woman, just tall, strong looking woman, right? Just her built, like kind of woman. And she was wearing what I can only describe as blue clingfilm, right? Just skin tight, blue outfit, which was, and it was just amazing. And she was with this guy with her. And I started to talk about I was just talking about Christmas, and you know, we've just gone through Christmas and blah 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 blah. And she was laughing hard. And everybody else was laughing, but I was just
focused on her. The blue cling film.
The blue cling film lady. And I thought to my, and then I did about 10-15 minutes, introduced the singer, then went on and did another 5 minutes and closed the night. And it was only when I was driving back home and I was thinking to myself, that is the kind of woman I find amazing, but I would never have the guts approaching myself, but yet I had her attention for all the time.
She was loving it, she wasn't feeling harassed,
she wasn't sort of like, you know, reaching for the pepper spray or anything at all. She, you know, she was unlikely to press charges. So I it was at that point that I thought to myself, that was good fun, I really enjoyed it, let me give this comedy thing. So I would say really January the 1st, 1994, when I was driving home, was when I kind of really got the bug to do stand-up, and to do stand-up seriously.
And then you just hit loads and loads of open spots, building up. Well, how did it work from there?
I went and I got the Comedian's Bible, Time Out magazine, which every comic, when they start out, needs to get hold of a copy. And you just kind of, because at that point, they'd say, you'd read every single ad, and because it said any acts interested in playing our club, bring this number. So, and at that point, it was a lot easier than it is now. You know what I mean? 12 years on, it's a hell of a lot harder for comics starting out than when it was 12 years. It was hard enough then, it's a lot harder now. And so you'd ring around and they say, well, yeah, ring back in 2 weeks, ring back in a month or whatever. But the longest you'd have to wait normally to do an open mic back then was about 3 weeks to a month at the most. And other places like the Comedy Store and John Burke, which are like the two biggest
industry,
you know, clubs to play in the UK. Nowadays it could be up to 6 months, you know, before you can actually get a look in. And so I ran around quite a few places, and I was fortunate because early on I was able to do gigs alongside people like Lee Hurst, Harry Hill, and a guy called Felix Dexter. And all three of them, especially Felix, recommended me to other comedy clubs and stuff, which was really, really helpful. And also when you got Harry Hill was and Lee Hurst at that time were like two of the biggest names still playing the circuit. And having those guys recommend you
meant something.
It did. It kind of pushed you to the top of the queue, to the front of the queue. So that was really, really, and I'm forever grateful to them for doing that for me. And so it kind of sped me along. Also, I was spotted at a gig by somebody who was working on a researcher who was working on a show for The Real McCoy back then. Because The Real McCoy was a black, well, sort of like urban, is probably the correct term, an urban sketch show, predominantly black cast, an Asian person, East Indian person.
And there were even less black comics around
But there was this, it was basically a sketch show, kind of like the English version of, like in America they had In Living Colour, while we had The Real McCoy. And they'd been going for about two or three seasons on the BBC, and they decided for the next season they would have they would introduce stand-up as a section, but not the cast do stand-up, but just kind of each week have a stand-up spot for, highlighting up-and-coming comics. And I was fortunate to be the first one to be, featured. And I did a set which kind of really propelled me. Because it was TV, my first TV, and again it went really, really well. And I still get people, saying to me, "I saw you in The Real McCoy, you really find the stuff you did about blah 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 blah." Because at the time, as you said, there weren't many black comics, there weren't many black people on TV. Because I think the same thing would happen in every single black household when a black person came on TV. Right?
Everything
would stop. Quick, everybody, there's a black man on telly. I would all rush to see the guy that either shot or arrested, you know what I mean? But it was cool. It was a good thing to do. It was good to be part of that sort of like...
And how did you develop your material? Because were you still telling stories at this point?
I was still telling stories. I was still telling still talking a lot about my family, about my parents and stuff, because I knew that my parents, my family could take a joke and that they loved me enough to forgive me, you know what I mean, if I kind of misrepresented in any kind of way. So I always knew that was safe. And also, because I didn't consider myself that politically minded, you had people like Jeremy Hardy and Mark Steele and Mark Thomas and Ben Elton who were doing the whole political thing and doing it really, really well. I thought to myself, I don't want to go up there and say, John Major, what an idiot, and all that kind of stuff. That was the only thing I'd have. So I would just talk about myself. I'd talk about things where there could be no comeback on, where people couldn't challenge me on my opinion, because I was talking about myself, my life, my family, and it was and also being a black stand-up in a sea in a when your audience, predominantly the audience and predominantly the people working on the bill were white, it kind of made me stand out as well, and I could talk about a different aspect of English life growing up in England than maybe a white guy growing up from Surrey or from Birmingham or whatever.
He'd been to university
yeah. and stuff, my viewpoint was slightly different.
Was there a black circuit at that time? Because there is now.
Not really a black circuit. I don't even think we can say there's a black circuit now. There's black spots, but there's not really a black but there's not really a black circuit, because every now and again, you may have a gig once a month or once every 2 months in Birmingham and Leeds and Manchester, but I still don't think it's big enough to sustain, a performer. You need to really branch out. There are guys who I started out with who still play predominantly black gigs, but they only gig maybe once or twice a month, and they're travelling to Nottingham to do it, to Birmingham, to Leeds and whatever, whereas in London there's upwards of 70 to 100 gigs a week happening in and around the London area. And so mathematically and financially it makes more sense you know what I mean, to play that circuit, to be a small fish in this huge pond, as supposed to be a medium-sized fish, you know, who only gigs, you know, a couple of
once
times
in a while. Yeah. So one of the-